Please be seated. Well, there's a great scene in the recent Netflix show, The Crown. How many of you have seen that? Yeah, good. You know, sometimes when I ask that question, I get blank faces staring up at me, so I'm glad to know a few have seen it. So I think this is from the first season, and the scene is the Queen Mother is vacationing on the coast in northern Scotland at a friend's estate. It's several years after the death of her husband, King George. Now, cinematography is amazing. It juxtaposes Scotland's rugged, windswept coast with this figure walking the beach in her grief and solitude. And the existential statement is powerful. No one, rich or poor, powerful or weak, is exempt from searing loss. At some point, the Queen Mother glimpses a large estate in the distance, precariously perched right on the edge of a bluff. She hikes over on the beach and finds that the place is run down. And the place resonates with the grief she's experiencing. She meets the owner and begins negotiations to buy the place. Some visits later, they are walking on the beach together back toward her friend's estate when two royal officials who've been desperately trying to find her stumble down a sandy embankment in their loafers, trying to maintain their dignity. "Mum, may we please have a word?" It's at that moment that the penny drops, and the gentleman who owns the precariously perched castle recognizes her. Western civilization loves stories like this. We love the idea that there might be among us someone who becomes famous, a secret princess or prince, either already or in the making. And we'd be right. But more about that in a minute. In societies influenced by the Christian faith, there's a deep irony, for we no longer remember the source of this fascination. In Luke, after the resurrection, two grief-stricken followers are, quote, talking with each other about all these things that had happened. Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. Or the more generalized conclusion of John's gospel, he was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. The season of Epiphany as a whole celebrates the inexpressible event present in this one, with an ongoing eye to how his light is revealed in ways that respect our dignity to either accept it, ignore it, or indeed forget that it exists. But Epiphany is more than this, more than how we come to awareness of God in the world. It's also about how we might yet come to be what is revealed. To not only recognize the one among us in quite shocking ways, but then by the mystery of this one's presence, become in ourselves what he revealed. And so it makes sense that the story of the Transfiguration has become the story that we should look at on the last Sunday of Epiphany season. It is both the epitome of the light stories, from the star that led the Magi to the extraordinary phrase that Jesus flung at his ragtag followers, "You are the light of the world." It's the penny-dropping moment that opens doorways to the past and to the future. To the past. With all the difference that Jesus makes, at the Transfiguration, Moses and Elijah appear beside him, the law and the prophets. However misunderstood, however much fear the giving of the law instilled in the Israelites, This was a moment of God's glory, by which we mean God's closeness to human beings, a revelation of loving intent. The giving of the law, of God's law in particular, is the beginning of culture. It removes us from our animal survival mode that pits everyone against everyone. To be able to know that rest is required of everyone on the seventh day, that parents are to be respected, that commitments are meant to be kept, is a foundation of a life that can now be lived in new freedom to create, because now we're not always looking over our backs. That's the theory. And to a large degree, we Canadians are a beneficiary of a vastly improved life because of the rule of law. Jesus' transfiguration was a penny-dropping moment for the first followers, because they would have remembered the stories of Moses' own shining face when the law was given. And so Jesus does not stand in contradiction to his Jewish past, but as one who has come to expose how the heart can be transformed in order that God's intentions revealed in the law might yet come to fruition, that the full spirit of the law, which is love, might be expressed over and against those who use even good laws to take away opportunities, who don't use the law to build a society of God's loving justice. The transfiguration is also a door to the present. The Magi may have wanted to stay in the hut with the toddler and the Holy Family, but no sooner have they presented their gifts when they are warned that their journey was not over and that from now on it wasn't going to be friendly but dangerous. And here on the mountain, Peter too wants to revel in the revelation. He wants to hold on to the moment, the sheer amazingness of it all, understandably so. But right here at the moment when it would seem that Peter got it right for once, this is the moment we should hold on to. We read that actually it's only a bridge, only a doorway to living in God's presence in the present, only a sign of what will come if we keep listening to the Beloved. In the contemplative prayer tradition, we are taught not to get too caught up in the ecstasies of life. These will pass. And not too down in our sorrows, because these too are merely a constellation of feelings. They too are not destiny for us. God's presence in our present gives us fresh courage to live, to go down off the mountain into the vagaries of daily life, to keep our wits about us and not overreact one way or the other. We are the beloved of the beloved, and therefore we can listen. We can learn. He is the light of the world, just so you and I are light for the world. It's tough to say this, but try this in your present. Maybe once a day. I am God's beloved. I am not the light, but in His light, I am a light for my family, for my neighborhood, at my workplace. Gulp. It's tough to say it. It's tough to say I am love. I am a light. But it's true. The transfiguration also opens a door to our future. In terms of Jesus himself, we see this to be true. God is determined, and so is Jesus, that he go to Jerusalem and face what needs to be faced. He has to come down off this mountaintop. And he's determined to face it alone, so that all our false stopping points, all those points where we want to create a little bit of security for ourselves, to indulge ourselves in false hope, can finally be exposed. God is determined to expose all our victimizing and all victims, so that not only a few like Moses and Elijah and Jesus and Peter are privileged with spiritual experiences, but that all of us, the whole world, may yet find ourselves in this story. Certain Gnostic sects wanted the transfiguration to be the climax of the Christian story. But though it foreshadows the divine desire for each of us, it is not the path itself. This event is a doorway to that path, a path that is both paradoxical and yet true to the human journey, a journey we traverse during Lent, which begins this week. Here on this mountain, Jesus is revealed in glory. There on the hill, Jesus will be revealed in shame. Here his clothes are shining. There his clothes will be stripped from his body, caked in blood. Here he is flanked by the law and the prophets, Moses and Elijah. There by two criminals. Here light, dazzling from within and above, a bright cloud bathes the scene. Then and there, a deep darkness will come upon the land. Here Peter stutters how wonderful things are. Can't we stay a while? Then he will be cursing that he doesn't know Jesus, trying to find a way out. Here the voice of God affirms what was said at Jesus' baptism, those wonderful words that I've just urged us all to say at least once a day. Then Jesus will express the shock of forsakenness. This story shows us, and all that comes after it, that success, quote unquote, is not the end. And that, believe it or not, is good news, because most of us don't live a fairy tale. The grand, glorious trajectory of the gospel is that God lives our pain and suffering with us, opening up a path of healing, hope, and transformation, not by escaping our troubles, but as we walk down into them, going in them and inside of them with us. We are the ones through whom this gospel shines, not by everything and in everything done right, but in our embrace of love, forgiveness, and the willingness to walk with each other. We are not solitary princesses or princes walking the beach alone in our grief, but at this table, the penny drops. In his gift, our eyes and ears are opened to each other, daughters and sons of the true King, by grace. We're all part of the crown. Amen.